Every good story has conflict. We learned that back even in high school, that there's always conflict within a story, and the conflict can vary and change, but you need it to be a catalyst. Otherwise, the story is just really boring. Oftentimes, the really, really powerful stories don't just have conflict, but they have suffering. And someone has to overcome adversity or suffering. They have to overcome trials in order to triumph. One of my favorite movies is Rudy, and I don't know if you've ever seen that, but it's the story of a young football player, and he grows up, and his dad always watches Notre Dame University football, and it's a big deal. And someday, you know, when he plays in high school, and he's just like, "Dad, someday I'm going to play for Notre Dame." And Rudy has the heart of a lion, but he's got the stature of about a 5'6", 5'8" guy, and you know, which is fine for high school football, but nobody is under the illusion that he's going to make it to play for the University of Notre Dame. Well, it's just his dream, and nothing's going to get in his way and stop him. So he goes and he figures out what he needs to do to get to Notre Dame. Well, he doesn't have the grades in high school to qualify for Notre Dame. It's a fairly prestigious school in the northern part of Indiana in South Bend, right on the border of Michigan. And he doesn't have the grades, so he goes to South Bend, and he can't get in, so he goes to like a smaller Catholic college to try to, for a couple of semesters, to try to get his grades up. And he eventually, the last chance he gets his grades up high enough, and he gets into Notre Dame. So then he's in Notre Dame. Again, now these guys recruit all over the country, and they get some of the best football players ever in the United States. And the guys that he's playing against are massive. Like, they make me look small, you know. So the guys are huge, and Rudy just wants to be on the team. And so they have these, like, open tryouts where most of the team is recruited, but they have open tryouts. Anyway, eventually Rudy's able to get on sort of the practice squad with a bunch of guys who basically get the snot beat out of them every practice, every day, so that the top guys can perform at the top level and they have a chance of winning the championship. So he's basically like a punching bag. But he just can't believe he's playing for Notre Dame. It's the most exciting thing in the world. But, you know, it's just another roadblock after roadblock and hurdle after hurdle. And, you know, he just shows such tenacity and heart. And then he's in his third year. And finally the coach says, "Look, Rudy, I'll let you dress for one game next year." And because even to put on the jersey for the game, to sit on the sidelines, they can only have so many players. And so he promises, "Next year, Rudy, I'll let you dress for one game." Well, it ends up that the coach changes. So they have a different head coach when he comes back for his final year. And that coach had made no such promise. And now Rudy is just so dejected because he thinks there's, you know, this coach didn't know that promise. I was supposed to dress for a game because he said, "Look, I tell everybody back home that I play with Notre Dame football, but they never see me on TV on Saturday for the games." Anyway, in the end, he fights his way in, and the players love him so much because he's just got so much heart, and he fights for every single inch. And he just plays so hard that the players actually come in and they put their jerseys on the desk and they say, "Rudy can play for me, coach. He can take my jersey. He can play for me." And like all of the players do that. So in the end, the coach is really kind of frustrated because he doesn't care. But every player wants Rudy to dress. And so he'll have other guys that won't play so that Rudy can. So anyway, Rudy gets to finally put on the jersey for the game, and he calls his family up, and they come down and watch him. And, you know, it's all at the very end of the game, and Notre Dame already has the game in the bag, but he gets to go out and play, like, the last 45 seconds of the game. And it's just victorious. Like, it's just, "Yeah, Rudy, Rudy," and everyone just cheers, and it's so exciting. You should watch it. It's a great movie. But he has to overcome adversity, right? And there's suffering all along the way. Or there's other movies, too. A more recent one I was watching a little bit was called The Upside. And it's got a black guy kind of from the ghetto, and he's got a rough life. And he's been to jail, and he has a parole officer that he needs to just get to. He has to go show that he's looking for work. And then there's this rich white guy who ends up being in a paragliding accident, and he becomes a quadriplegic. And it's just about how these two guys are both suffering in their own ways, but they kind of, fate brings them together, and you can see how they are able to support one another. And it's quite a tale. But, you know, if they're well told, the stories that include suffering, they make us feel something. They make us feel the hurt. They make us experience the pain with them in the story. You walk through the journey, or you watch a movie, and it's inspiring because you felt the dejection, and then you felt the victory, or you felt the awkwardness of the situations. But when it comes to our lives, it's not just a story. It's real. The suffering is real. When it comes to our pain, it's felt. When it comes to our grief, it's carried. When it comes to our prognosis, it's shattering. So, how are we to deal with suffering? I decided I'd keep it light today. No, in all honesty, I've been just hearing from friends, hearing from you, and hearing how much stuff is going on in your lives, in the lives of the people that I care about. And I thought, we got to deal with this a little bit. How does this tie in? And you know what? We just came through a series on God is love, and He is. And you can go back and watch those or listen to them. But there's still suffering in this world. How do we reconcile that? So I'll answer all of your questions in the next 20 minutes. Oh, what? I can't sit? Okay. So no, but we'll address a little bit today. Suffering's huge. It's a big reality in life. And even as Christians, we're not exempt. And anybody who told you that following Jesus would make you exempt or make life easier was lying to you. And I'm sorry about that. Suffering is as varied as the people who bear it. Physical, emotional, mental, spiritual. There's all sorts of different kinds of suffering, and it's all in different forms and in varying degrees. It's shaped by your personality, shaped by your thresholds. I remember reading about Lance Armstrong. It was a really good biography until it really did come out many years later that he was doping. That was really disappointing. But part of the reason why Lance Armstrong was such a great cyclist is because he had a super high pain threshold. And so even as they did some studies, like beyond the drugs, even without the drugs, his pain threshold was way higher than the average person. So when it comes to those cycling through the grueling mountains in France, I mean, he loved the way he dominated uphill. That's where he passed people. But that was partly because he had a different threshold of pain. And part of as we deal with suffering, we need to understand that everybody's different, that everybody has a different pain threshold. And you might have a huge physical pain threshold and a very small emotional pain threshold. Or you might have a very small, vice versa, right? Or mentally, you could experience anguish. Some people have a real sensitive spirit. They experience empathy for people. And if you're in the room and you hurt, it's very difficult for them because they feel your pain in a way that's very visceral, very real and tangible for them. And we're all different. So suffering is so varied. And what causes suffering is so varied. I think of the story of Moses. And this is where we're going to end up in Psalm 90, which is attributed to Moses. It just says a psalm of Moses, but the psalms are all attributed to different authors, but it doesn't always mean that they were written by those authors. Because the way that the Hebrew describes it, it could mean about, it could mean from, it could mean by. So there's a number of different ways that that's framed, but there's no doubt that Psalm 90 is referring, at least wants us to think of Moses and his story. And so even in the story of Moses, you know, there's a number of times when he's suffering, where even as a baby, his mom sent him, put him in a basket and sent him down the river. Then he grew up in the palace, and that was great. But, after that, he was siding with his people and killed an Egyptian. And then he had to flee for his life. So he was in the desert for 40 years. Moses' life can be broken up into like 40-year increments. So kind of his first 40 was basically in the palace, growing up and in the palace. Second 40 was out in the back 40 in the desert. And in Midian, found a wife and made a life, experienced God, and then came back, and then he began to bring deliverance. And part of what I love is that Moses really got things kicked off at 80. So anyone here who thinks they're like, hey, you know what, I'm retired, I need to slow down, I'm checking out, man. Moses didn't even really start till he was 80. It took him that long for God to form him into the man God wanted him to be. So don't think that at 65, God has nothing for you, okay? That's just a side note. But then is when really Moses' suffering didn't start till he started to get to prime time, right? At 80 years old. Then he's got to deal with Pharaoh. What a life. It's so epic. I mean, even if you watch the Ten Commandments with Charlton Heston, that's epic, right? Like, it's an epic story. It's so huge and expansive. And the highs are so high and the lows are so low. And God comes through in so many ways. But then the people disobey again and again. And God gets so angry because after he's done all of this and he sent the plagues and he brought all of them out of Egypt, freed them from slavery, he parted the Red Sea, you know, he did all these things. Brings them through, provides food from out of nowhere, water from out of a rock, bread. That when that's not enough, he gives them meat and quail. He has the pillar of fire by night and a pillar of cloud by day. He leads them every step of the way, and yet you keep getting grumble, grumble, grumble. Why did you lead us out here? And I'm not saying we're any better. We lose perspective too sometimes. But Moses and the Israelites, they end up getting to the promised land after a journey through the desert, which would have been relatively brief, maybe a year or two to go from Egypt. And they get to Canaan, and they send in 12 spies, and they're in the land for 40 days, and they go spy things out. And 10 of them come back and say, there's no way we can take those guys. They're huge. I mean, the land is beautiful. It is milk and honey. It's amazing, but there's no way we can defeat that group of people. But two of them, Joshua and Caleb, they're like, we can do it. Caleb is just like, he's got this energy. He's like, let's go for it. But everyone else was sort of saying, no, we can't do it. And the thing is this wasn't Moses' plan. It was God's plan. And God was directing them to do it. So when these guys were speaking against and saying, we can't do it, they're speaking against God. And that really angered God. And so, and it frustrated him. So then that's kind of when the suffering started. And after that, God was furious. God was going to wipe them all out. And Moses pleaded with God and said, God, just wait. Think about your reputation. You just did all of these miraculous things and you brought us all here. And now the Egyptians know that you are God. I mean, you are sovereign. You're amazing. They've seen what you can do. And now if you just wipe us all out, if you wipe out all your people, they'll say, what kind of God is that? He brought them all out and he just slaughtered them all. And Moses is able to get God to relent and show mercy. But the consequence was that from that point on, anybody who is 20 years old and older was going to die as they wandered around in the desert. So for the next 40 years, they had to wander around in the desert waiting for that generation to die off. Now, when you think about the suffering, like most of us don't know what we're going to suffer. We don't know how long it's going to be. We don't know what it's going to look like. But when you think about just hearing that, to be like, if God told you, okay, everybody, for 40 years, you're going to wander in the hottest part of this region, and you're going to die naturally. So I'm not going to speed this up. You got 40 years to learn the lesson. And for even for Moses and Joshua and Caleb, you got to think, are you serious? We've got to pay the price for these dummies? Like, we got to wander around the 40 years too? They didn't say that. But that's what I would be thinking. So then they have this suffering of 40 years of wandering around in the desert because they disobeyed God. Anyway, that's a little bit of the framework for the psalm that I want to read, so that when you hear this, you have an idea of the context of what the story is being referred to here as we read this together. So in Psalm 90, I'm going to read the whole thing for you. Lord, you have been our dwelling place throughout all generations. Before the mountains were born, or you were brought forth, or you brought forth the whole world, from everlasting to everlasting, you are God. You turn people back to dust, saying, return to dust, you mortals. 1,000 years in your sight are like a day that has just gone by, or like a watch in the night. Yet you sweep people away in the sleep of death, and they are like the new grass of the morning. In the morning it springs up new, but by the evening it's dry and withered. We are consumed by your anger and terrified by your indignation. You have set our iniquities before you and our secret sins in the light of your presence. All our days pass away under your wrath. We finish our years with a moan. Our days may come to 70 years or 80 if strength endures, yet the best of them are but trouble and sorrow, for they quickly pass and we fly away. If only we knew the power of your anger. Your wrath is as great as the fear that is your due. Teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Relent, O Lord. How long will it be? Have compassion on your servants. Satisfy us in the morning with your unfailing love, that we may sing for joy and be glad all our days. Make us glad for as many days as you have afflicted us, for as many years as we have seen trouble. May your deeds be shown to your servants, your splendor to their children. May the favor of the Lord our God rest on us. Establish the work of our hands for us. Yes, establish the work of our hands. Suffering. Nobody wants to suffer. Nobody wants to endure suffering. But when we suffer, it usually brings about a number of things, but one of those things is a perspective. It often causes us to zoom out. I don't know if you ever do anything with photography. I am a photo enthusiast. But zooming out gives you a wider angle. It gives you a broader view. And suffering often causes those who are bearing it to view things a little more broadly. It causes us to see life from a bigger perspective. Now, I want to say, kind of at this point, that many of you have suffered more than I have. Many of you have suffered more than I will in my entire life. Not hopefully that you suffer more, but that I won't endure it that much. But it's not a matter of how much. It's just a matter of when you find yourself suffering. We will all suffer, and it's not a competition. And I'm not speaking to you as though I have all the answers, or that I've experienced the worst suffering that's available. I just want to look at, sort of find some hope in God's word for us when we face these times. But as suffering causes us to zoom out, I think it causes us to see life from a bigger perspective. And I think that it brings about a perspective that sometimes can include humility. Suffering can produce humility. The Bible's pretty consistent in the message from Old Testament to New that talks and encourages the people of faith to persevere even through suffering, that it develops character, character leads to hope, as it says in Romans 5. Whether it's cancer or the loss of a loved one or a tragedy strikes or a divorce or maybe it's just aging, That's not to minimize. Aging happens too. And there's just things that come, sometimes suffering comes with aging. But I think that suffering, what I wanted to highlight and where I'm camping out is verse 12. That says, teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. What I find interesting is through this whole psalm, he gets to this point, and there's a number of requests there, but this one stood out to me. And the request is, as the person, as the writer or as the reader is praying this or singing this to God, that there's a request here to the Lord that we would be taught, that he would teach us, that sometimes suffering or punishment or discipline or whatever, but when we suffer, it often brings us to the point where we become teachable. And that's what we see here. The author says, teach us. There's a request. There's an opportunity to learn lessons that we would otherwise miss. And if we're not careful, we would miss it. Oftentimes, suffering brings those painful reminders that we are not in control. So much of life we run through, literally run through, and we feel like we're in control. And we do things and we structure things and we create things and we want to be in control and we design our lives as best we can to be in control. But there's always those we would call untimely things that we run into, and they remind us that we are not in control. Suffering, as we zoom out, suffering can remind us what's really important. I heard of a person recently who was diagnosed with terminal cancer, and they were kind of going around, they were just talking with everybody they had a chance to talk with, which was limited, but they're saying, look, if I've wronged you or harmed you in any way, please forgive me. If I've caused any harm, like they wanted to be right with people. In the busyness, we hold our positions and we have our opinions and we, and that's fine. But when we come and we suffer and we realize that we don't maybe have as much life left as we thought, oh gosh, my opinions really aren't as important as I thought they were my entire life. What's really important often gets brought to the forefront when we're suffering. Teach us to number our days aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. Now the request is also to the only one who can give us that perspective. It really takes the Lord to help us understand how to number our days aright. One of the things I found interesting here is when it says, teach us to number our days, I thought about how, it just sort of Bible nerdiness, I guess, but it's interesting that Moses and the Israelites were sort of punished in the wilderness to suffer for 40 years. Because they were in the land of Canaan for 40 days, and they didn't do what God wanted. So the 40 days that they spied out the land, and then they decided not to attack like God said. God said, okay, you're going to have 1 year for every day that you were spying out the land. You're going to be wandering in the desert 1 year for every day. I was like, oh, I never saw that before. But if you think about that, and then you read it, teach us to number our days aright. Those 40 days turned into 40 years. And friends, you know this. Life is a mist. Ecclesiastes, the author, writes again and again, life is a mist. Whew. When you spray bottle, whew, like you get 2 seconds to see that and it's gone. The author talks about that earlier on when he talks about 1,000 years in your sight is like a day that has just gone by, or even shorter, like a watch in the night. Time in the perspective of God is so quick. It's so short. And we spend our grueling days and years and months, and we just, sometimes suffering feels like it'll never end. And when you're in the middle of it, it just feels like it's never going to end. I guess that's one thing. I just want you to know it'll end. Take hope. Like, there is an ending. And I don't know when it is. But there will be an end. So here's what I think about when I think about this one verse. And I hope you carry this with you today, this verse. It's easy to memorize. It's short. If you understood how brief your life really is, how would you invest it? If you understood how brief your life really is, how would you invest it? We all say things that reflect, like, how fast time has gone. When you think about how fast your kids grow up, I chatted with my neighbor the other day, and they were like, what? Ezra's going into kindergarten? No way. It's like, yeah, we've lived in this house for 5 years. We moved in when Ezra was born. Wow. We just celebrated 10-year anniversary. And I'm sure, and you, many of you have way more years than that under your belt. You could tell me how fast. How fast did those 50 years go? Those 30 years? The 65 years? How fast did that go? You know, sometimes you feel like yesterday, man, we just got married yesterday. Other times it feels like, man, we got married 65 years. Oh, wait, it's only 10? No. I mean, but you know, time is relative, right? And things make time feel fast or slow, but the clock ticks at the same rate. And so we need a perspective from outside of ourselves, and we can ask the teacher to say, teach us to number our days aright, our years aright, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. So another question that I have for you is, would you be willing to ask God to teach you? See, suffering doesn't guarantee that you learn anything. There's lots of people who just suffer, and it just sucks. It's horrible. It's miserable. It lasts for a really long time. They want to die. That happens too. So there's no guarantee that we learn anything from suffering. But would you be willing, whether you're suffering now or the next time, or whenever you suffer, would you be willing to allow or to ask God to teach you? To teach you to number your days with his perspective and his values. And that is how we gain a heart of wisdom. Now, isn't it interesting here that he says a heart of wisdom? He doesn't say mind. A wise heart. We don't usually put that together very often, do we? A wise heart. But the request, the learner wants to gain a heart of wisdom. Teach us, Lord. Teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom, a wise heart. What is a wise heart? I think a wise heart is one that has been tempered by suffering, one that has compassion and empathy. I think that's what a wise heart is. Now again, the Bible doesn't expand on, this is a psalm, this is a poem, a song. It's filled with imagery and creativity. It's meant to be meditated on and reflected on and sat with. But when I think about the context and I think about what he's been saying, well, what is a wise heart? But I believe a wise heart is a heart of compassion and empathy. And you know this because you know people who have compassion and empathy. And you may or may not know why they have that. But you know that you want to be around those people. You know that there's something unique about those people, that there's something special. You know, people who have experienced divorce, have a different perspective on marriage. They have a different compassion for other people who have experienced divorce. People who have lost a child have compassion for those who lose a child. They understand in a way that many others can't. They've been shaped by suffering in ways that others can't. No. People who have had cancer, who have survived cancer, have been shaped usually quite deeply, especially, or can be shaped, can be. Again, there's no guarantee, but even for Christians, especially when we come to something like cancer, it causes us to ask some pretty big questions, doesn't it? Why, God? Why me, God? Why now, God? Heal me. Save me. Help me. Get me through this. You know, we have folks in our church, many, a number of you have gone through cancer and experienced that healing. Some people are in it right now. Some of you have kids in it now. Some of you have family members in it now, parents, whatever. I mean, but I think a wise heart is the heart that is shaped by our life experiences, by the suffering that we've had. And we hate suffering, and we don't like it, and we don't want it. We don't want it in my story. It's a great movie, and I like watching the movie, but I don't want it here. Thank you very much. Let's keep it in the movies. But we all know that life, there's no protective barrier that can keep it out. But we do know that we can come to our Lord and say, God, teach us. Teach me something through this suffering. Teach me to number my days aright. Show me even the purpose you have for my life now, in this phase, at this age, at this stage. How can I serve you? Give me a heart of compassion. Lord, I want a wise heart. Friends, you have so much power and potential in your hurt that God has healed, or that God is healing, or that God is working through. And too often we hide that, and we don't want to share it. And that's, I mean, privacy, and I get it. We're all different. You don't need to share with everybody, but I just don't want you to miss. I've been in this job too long to know that people feel ashamed, or they think, look, I'm weak, I'm broken, you know, I have that's in my past, or I don't want to talk about that. And that's fine. You don't have to air everything out. But the thing is, God uses those things in such a powerful way. And if you don't allow God to bring healing, maybe you're still hurting from some things in the past. If you don't allow God to bring the healing, then it's not fully utilized for what it could be. The suffering that you've gone through God can use that. If you ask him to teach you, if you ask him to give you a wise heart, I believe your compassion and your empathy will deepen. And when you hear the needs, not every need will resonate with you, but some needs will resonate in an unnatural way with you. You'll hear someone's story and you're like, man, I started weeping. I don't know what it was, but when I heard that, oh my goodness, it just cut me to the heart. And I would say that's a wise heart. That God can build in you compassion and empathy through suffering if you'll allow him. Whether it's cancer, divorce, death, betrayal. None of us wants that in our stories, but they can shape us into the image of Jesus, a suffering Savior. Jesus didn't ride in like a conquering hero when he was here. That comes at the end of all things. When Jesus came on this earth, he felt what you felt. He experienced what you've experienced. He hurt like you hurt. He wept like you wept. And I just want to encourage you that regardless of what you're going through, hang in there. Let God do his work in your life. Let him complete the work of that suffering and give you a wise heart. A wise heart is useful to our God. A wise heart is useful to our God. Let us pray. Lord, my prayer today is that you would teach us to number our days, that we would gain a heart of wisdom. Lord, would we have the courage to ask you for that when we're suffering? I pray that your Spirit would bring encouragement to those who need it today. Lord, would you grant me a wise heart? Help me to grow in my compassion and empathy for those in this congregation, for those in our neighborhood, for those in our community, and for the lost. Lord, would you do that in us? Would your will be done here on earth as it is in heaven? Amen.